A real visceral example I can give you was like 6 years ago, I was leading a transition project for a customer service centre for a government organisation. I went into this meeting room, it was my meeting, 20 middle-aged white blokes in a room who were the architects and the techies. Somebody starts talking and I was actually asked if I was taking the minutes.
Laura Lord, welcome to the podcast. This is the bit where I rip off your LinkedIn profile right, and see the whites of your eyes to see if you remember what you wrote. Ooh. So, Laura Lord, a product owner / advanced scrum master / senior agile delivery manager / project manager with over 10 years experience of working with public and private companies, delivering user-centered design and digital transformation of services. A keen advocate of agile delivery and user-centered design, alongside client and OpenCast work, which we'll get onto, that's who you work for.
Yeah.
You're also studying sociology to enable greater consideration of the impact society has on service users.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember writing that?
I do remember writing that.
Is it still true? Yeah.
It is still true,
right.
Yeah.
Apart from that, I mean, who's Laura?
Who's Laura? I'm a mum, so mum to two little boys. But predominantly, it sounds terrible to say, like, work is probably my driving factor in life.
Yeah.
Quite ambitious and kind of started my career in accountancy and just found it so dull. You know, working day two, press this button, working day three, write this report. And it was just the monotonous cycle. So I started getting involved in more projects and change. And I was like, oh, I like this. Every time there's something new, I want to be involved. So I started to get involved in a bit more finance projects because my background was obviously in accountancy, and then developed into HR projects and IT projects, and then just kind of snowballed from there, really. So I think I'm more about change and new stuff. I'm definitely a starter, not a finisher. I've recognized that through my career. You know, give me a new piece of discovery and I'm buzzing.
How did you come to find that out? Sorry, going into it
away.
That's
all right.
It's quite self-aware of someone to admit that.
Yeah, I think I'm easily distracted. Like, oh, shiny new thing. Let me go and look at the shiny new thing. So I quite like early days, setting up, starting something, getting it running, getting it really smooth, and then being able to walk away from it and let someone else finish it, I'm really cool with.
Yeah.
I think I've just recognised that through probably boredom. You know, something's not hard anymore, it's not challenging me anymore, I'm happy to move on from it.
So
that's kind of recognizing that starter finisher. And then so kind of that career from finance into change, and I started to work for part of the NHS when they were just introducing digital and agile. So it was the NHS Business Services Authority, and it was like, at the time, it was peak career happiness. It was exciting. It was new. We were getting grass put on the walls and, you know.
Beanbags.
The beanbags and all this new digital stuff. And I thought, that's quite exciting. I want to be part of that. So I was running a program at the time for exemption checking services. So protecting the NHS from error and fraud and loss, which was interesting. I loved it. I was really passionate about that project. It was like my baby. And I thought, I could make this so much more efficient by flipping it into an agile project. And I did. And then I sort of learned about government digital standards and user-centered design. And the passion just ignited in me for this program, which I loved anyway, but then the skill set that we could apply to it. And I think that's when I knew that was where I wanted to be in my career. And then I think a couple of permy jobs later, kind of had a bad run-in with some people at a senior level in a public organisation, which I won't mention.
Yeah, please don't.
And then I thought, you know what, actually, maybe consultancies for me, constant change, I can move on to a new client as soon as something's up and running. So, yeah, ended up in OpenCast then.
And who are they? Because I did obviously had a little look, but...
Yeah. So they're a growing consultancy that kind of, they started in Newcastle, so they were headquartered in Newcastle, and I used to be based in Newcastle, so I worked with them at the NHS. And then they've grown, so when I joined, I think I was one of their first remote employees in the Northwest. they have like a satellite hub in Edinburgh, but they've now grown so much. We've got satellite hubs in Edinburgh, Leeds, London, Glasgow, maybe Manchester coming quite soon.
Is that as in like open shared working? You can just drop in basically.
Yeah. So it's like full hybrid working, but it's just a really nice space to go meet your colleagues and work from. And they tend to do mostly government, public sector work, which relates to my background. So it was a really nice fit. One of the things that I always say is we just don't employ dickheads. You know, everyone's really like-minded, but it's not an echo chamber. We'll all challenge each other and have a good bit of debate. But everyone wants to do a good job and do the right thing. So it's just a brilliant place to work, to be honest.
Yeah. We'll definitely keep that bit in. We'll send that to them later. I mean, you mentioned user-centered design.
Yeah.
If we assume there's people listening, watching, however they're consuming this,
mm-hmm.
maybe don't know what that is. I mean, I'd like to think they have an idea if they're
listening. I would
listening.
Hope so.
But if we just boil it down, what is it and why are you so passionate about it?
So in the simplistic terms, it's building for the need of the user. So whatever that service or product might be, it should only exist if there's a user need for it. And identifying that need and matching it pace for pace in terms of the technology, or maybe it's not technology. Maybe the user need is, I need a piece of paper to sign. That's fine. Building that right thing based on that user need. And I think it's so fascinating for me. I love people, which we might come back to, is why I'm doing sociology.
Yeah.
But just talking about, you know, showing someone a screen that's been developed and saying, how does this work for you? And they say, well, I couldn't find that button. Or just watching how they interact with it to see that their eyes naturally follow a pattern or a route, and therefore your pathway should take them on that way, and you're thinking about that user journey. It's so simple, but it's so effective. It's just can redirect whole design and hopefully business appetite for change for the right reasons. That's why I'm quite passionate.
That was a really boring story, but you might find it interesting because you're interested in it. It's on Disney Plus last night.
Yeah.
Watching a documentary. And you have to go out of it, you touch back on the left-hand side. But to exit it, you have to go back to the right. And I thought, why didn't they just do it in the same place? So you can go bang, bang, straight back to the homepage. And that's the sort of thing that can make a real difference.
Yeah.
In terms of flow. And I thought, I'll bring that up tomorrow because we're going to be talking about it. I suppose, are there any good examples that spring to mind of you, like a user-centered product design?
So I think we'll come on to it as well. I don't think government always do it right. They do it terribly quite often. But if you start to think about things like applying for your passport, which everybody has to do at some point. Years ago, it was a terrible form that you had to get someone to read and pay 40 quid for them to read it. And even then they might say, that's crap, we're not going to approve it. The service that's been implemented now and the way that the Gov structure their pages is like one question per page. Simple language, like, don't give us loads of bollocks that we can't understand. Like, really plain and simple English, one page, one question. Is that a yes or a no? Do I know what I'm answering? Like, the simplicity of those Gov pages now is miles apart from where it was before.
Do they talk to each other?
No.
Because you're giving me a really good example, and my mind goes straight to, do they speak to the HMRC and their government gateway?
So government gateway is a shared platform that all of the services can interact with. So Verify on the front of government gateway is a shared platform, but they all use it so slightly differently.
Okay.
So if you're verified in one, you're not necessarily straight verified in another.
Because like everyone uses the passport one as an example. And then I think, but this, like, I'll give you another sort of case study, getting someone through the security clearance process.
Yeah.
I mean, if the passport people and security clearance, so there's got to be some overlap there.
Yeah.
I always wonder, do these departments speak to each other?
Well, when I worked in the NHS and we were doing prescription error and fraud, right? The whole basis of getting free prescriptions is if you're on benefits.
Or live in Wales.
Or live in Wales, yeah, if you're lucky. You're not over the border,
no,
are you?
No, not quite.
Yeah. As I was then representing the health service, I'd go to DWP saying, can I just check, is Jack on any benefits and I can give him his prescription free, or I'm not going to give him a fine.
Yeah.
Basically, it was like retrospectively. DWP would have been like, well, I can't really tell you that. Well, you can, because policy says if you're playing with them, I'll play with them, and I need to know if that's lined up.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm talking 10 years ago now when I was running that one. That was painful. They wanted encrypted emails, hundreds of thousands of quid just to send an email with a file on that says who's on benefits.
Yeah.
It has progressed now. So departments are talking to each other, but in silos, not necessarily. And I probably get loads of stick actually from technologists who will say open source APIs are more readily available. Like, technology's moved on a lot.
Yeah, that side of it. Yeah. In terms of the sociology side, what triggered that and how has it influenced, changed your mind about the whole designing products for people?
A chip I've always had on my shoulder is I never got a degree, right? I came out of school, didn't quite get on with my A-levels. So I started to do vocational qualifications and that's how I got into accountancy and whatnot. But I'd go for jobs sometimes and people would say, the other person had a degree and it would piss me off. Mm. So last year, I was a bit fed up, a bit like scratching around, thinking I want to do something for myself. I work hard, look after my kids, run around after them all the time. What can I do for me? And the thing that I love is learning.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd do a degree. And what I want to do was demography, because I find it fascinating when you think about how groups of people can influence business decisions in the future. You know, we know the over 55s have all the money. We know that they're in iller health later life. And that could generate so many ideas for business opportunities. But you couldn't do demography on its own, have to do social science.
And demography for a muggle is?
Is the geography of people. So understanding, things like Gen X, Gen Z, Gen
Got
Y.
Yeah.
That kind of understanding. So I started to do social science. And I always say this to ring around. It's not that I haven't got values and morals. I think I'm just that laid back, right? I don't really give a toss about much. If you're not impacting me, crack on.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything's fine. And now I've started to study some 1 year into 6 years. Just starting my second year. Got my textbooks yesterday. Quite excited. I recognise now that I'm becoming a bit more of a feminist and a bit more of a, like, I have higher opinions of things now that I've got a little bit more base understanding about some of these social science impacts that society can have on you. So I think maybe it's an inclusiveness awareness when I'm going to be working with government building these public facing services to build for wider society other than people like me.
And how have you taken that into, I know you're just about to start the second year, but is there anything you've taken in, you know, to the workplace that you've already thought, oh, actually, I can make a little bit, you know, 1% difference there, or the start of a snowball?
I think, I feel like I'm being unmodest here, but like I've kind of become a step away now from being the person building the services. I run a team, I've got 35 delivery managers that I work with at the moment. So probably a step removed, they're all the ones on the ground doing the good work.
Mm.
But what I've taken in is probably my inclusiveness of people in my team.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that I was ever excluded people, but just having a better awareness in how I can support people.
How does one go about, I'm going to use the term leading.
Yeah.
Although there is probably some management responsibility as well. We can't get away from that, but... Yeah, how does one go about working with that many people, either alongside or from a hierarchical point of view?
Yeah.
Underneath, you know, how do you...
So one of the things about OpenCast is that there isn't really a hierarchy. It's a really flat structure.
Okay.
There's the board. As we've grown so much, we've now created a bit more of a management. Well, we call it the leadership community. And then we have our consultants.
Right.
So I don't think of myself as their boss or as their leader. I think I'm maybe like you would in a scrum team, I'm their servant leader. Like anything I can do to enable them to do a better job.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not. We're growing more processes and a bit more consistent application of our agile methodology, but actually, we employ skilled consultants who can, you know, their shit. You know, they're bringing it to the table anyway. I don't get involved. I don't have to be hands-on. I don't micromanage. I'll help if they raise the flag, or if somebody else raises a flag that there's a concern, then I'll step in and support. But it's more about coaching, not about being really directive and what they need to do.
What does coaching mean to you based off that?
I'm terrible at it. I shouldn't say that because I think I'm a doer. I'm a proactive person. So I have to sometimes sit on my hands and say, I'm not going to fix this for you, but I really want to. Coaching to me is about asking them the right questions to enable them to come to the conclusions themselves.
Yeah. Does it always work?
No. No. But that might be on my part as well, in that I do just get stuck in and try and resolve stuff.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the person being coached. We need people to have open mindsets and growth mindsets and really want to fix things for themselves.
Yeah. What if someone comes to you and says, I really like you as a person, you're part of the leadership community, but from a coaching point of view, it's not working.
Yeah.
How do you go about?
I think I will have a personal defensiveness immediately that I really have, that I stop, I take a pause.
Yeah.
And then just accept that. Not everyone's for everyone. I just need to go match them up with a better coach a coach that fits their needs. That's fine. Yeah. Like, why don't you like me?
Yeah, again, like being back in school and getting picked last of football. Maybe that was just me. Agile, capital A, little A, whatever. What does that mean to you? What thoughts spring to mind?
For me, it's more about the people than the technology or the process. So what springs to mind is that empowerment, that self-driven, that self-organizing team. And maybe it's because of where I've been lucky, where I've worked in Opencast as well. Bringing really good professionals from all of their areas in the multidisciplinary team and really respecting what they bring to the table, not trying to tell them what to do and allowing everyone to do a job well as a team is really powerful.
Yeah. I mean, from your point of view as someone in that leadership community, and I'm making an assumption these consultants are a mixture of permanent and the contractor.
It's highly permanent. We only have about 2% consultant.
That's probably
contractor.
Probably better for the question then. How, and this comes up all the time, how do you measure the value of insert role in the agile space? Scrum master, product owner, delivery manager, Kanban expert, whatever, project manager. How do we prove, or how do they go about keeping the receipts of the great work they're doing? Because those roles, sometimes it's like they get questioned because every other role does. So sometimes it's like the agile community think, I'm a scrum master, you can't monitor my performance. Well, not monitor, you can't review, you can't ask me what value I'm bringing. So I just wondered how you tackle that or navigate that.
It has to be through feedback mechanisms with the team, be that one-on-one having a professional conversation with someone. You know, if I was as a product manager, I might come and talk to a delivery manager and say, I didn't quite like how you did that thing. Can we try something different, or maybe we should apply something else? Through retrospective, constant check-in across all of the teams, not just back on the delivery manager. It can only be through the people, I think.
Yeah. And the team, in terms of delivering, it's that tricky combination of those roles are there to help with delivery.
Yeah.
So how do we prove that if the team are delivering it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I always find that a tricky one.
I don't just think it's there's a product at the end of it that we've delivered. I think it has to be that it's delivered well to a good quality. People have enjoyed it. Like, if people have been dragged through that and they've hated it, it's been the worst project they've ever worked on. Yeah. I don't think that's a good delivery outcome.
No. I suppose it's changing that mindset of reviewing the team, not just the individuals within it.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I still think it's a challenge, because I've been in situations quite recently where it's like this agile change is under the microscope, and it's like, okay, folks, let's try and track, not for any performance related activity or bonus related activity or pay, but let's start tracking the experiments that you're doing, the continuous improvement activities, because whether we like it or not, we may be in a situation where we have to justify being here. We may not like it, but that question may come.
Yeah.
So it's trying to, it's always a challenge to get people to keep the receipts, I find, unless it's done in a gentle way. I don't know. I maybe haven't got the answer, but every role gets put under the microscope at some point. And if you haven't got that evidence to back it up, you're sort of letting you'd be setting yourself up for a whipping potentially.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just because I'm a bit more like, get it done. But, I don't know. One to ponder. If anyone's got any suggestions, put them in the comments. Like and subscribe. I mean, how do you commit to a 6-year journey? From the sociology point of view, what does
There's yearly breaks.
Okay, fair enough.
To get the degree.
Especially with juggling like the family and stuff.
Yeah,
And work. Like, how have you found that in the first year? And what are you going to take on? And what are you going to sort of progress in the second or take forward?
So in the first year, I found myself, reading my textbook and writing essays at a kid's football training, sitting on the back floor of the sports hall, sitting in my car watching a mat when the kids are playing footy. There was one time that I was in a trampoline park with my textbook, but I loved it because the highlighters were glowing in the UV lights in the trampoline park.
Costco.
Yeah.
Yeah,
get me entertained anyway for an hour or two. And I think just that finding half an hour here and a half an hour there. And actually, I don't know, it's just the way I've managed to set myself up to work. If I can find an hour or two of quite dedicated time, you get through so much more than you think.
Yeah, yeah. It's just being disciplined, isn't it?
Yeah.
Back to the agile thing. I jumped around because I was just interested in how you're tackling that. Do you engage with the agile community as in outside of Opencast? How are you finding it at the moment? What are your thoughts? Do you get involved in any of the
debates? So this is really interesting. I think it's one of the first things that we spoke about on LinkedIn, right? I lived in Newcastle for 10 years. It's where I discovered Agile. It's got a buzzing, thriving Agile community, right? There's events every week if you wanted to. Everybody sort of gets to know each other. You know the community really well. I moved back to the Wirral 6 years ago, and I've just not found a network to tap into. I think Liverpool Digital's actually just come on my radar, and there's an event next week.
Yeah, last couple of weeks.
Yeah,
Emily has set that up.
Yeah, so I'm going to tap into that. So when I've been in Newcastle and there's been an event on while I've been working up there, because that's where the headquarters are for Opencast, I've gone to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get real value out of them, but I've struggled so much in the northwest, so I'm really grateful.
Yeah, the few in Manchester, isn't there, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we need a bigger presence, I think, in sort of Liverpool ways even. I think some of the agencies have created consultancy offices out of Liverpool now, so I'd hope we start to build a bit more.
Yeah, it's the Baltic Triangle, isn't there? Creative. They seem to have a lot going on. But yeah, specific to Agile, very little apart from this new one that seems to have been spun up over the last couple of weeks. Like, I can't preach to that choir, to be honest, because I'm terrible at attending stuff like that.
Well, maybe I can drag you along now that I know you're only up the road.
That's a trait I'm trying to work on. We'll see. Baby steps. You mentioned sociology. We've spoken a bit about that. Outside of the sort of agile ecosystem, where do you think people could benefit from drawing inspiration from? Like what books, what do you watch, what do you listen to?
Crap at stuff like this, you know. I watch Grey's Anatomy and mind-numbing stuff so that I don't think, you know, when I...
But that's I think that's a good answer within itself.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to be able to switch off.
Yeah. I play those really annoying little games just to switch off with background noise on the TV.
Yeah, yeah.
I think by the time I've done a day's work, put the kids to bed, done my study, I'm mush, you know.
Do you, and I sit here as a bloke asking this, but I think it's important to ask.
You're cringing as you ask it, I can see
because
it.
Because it's every, if you, you know, for people who have watched a few of these episodes, I do find it difficult, but two kids, work, university, or distance learning, whatever. Do you feel the pressure to be everything to everyone all of the time?
I feel pressure that I put on myself, not that society puts on me.
Okay, that's interesting. What does that mean?
I don't feel like I'm going to let anybody else down if I don't do those things.
Okay, that's good.
You know, I'm doing these for a place of, I find it quite interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely. I don't feel a pressure from an external factor, but maybe it's a societal impact on my mindset that means that I'm doing this to myself because of ingrained things.
Yeah, yeah.
From history.
Has the being a woman in tech thing ever been an issue for you?
No, age has.
Age, okay.
But being a woman hasn't. I don't think.
Let's explore that.
Or maybe it has. So, A real visceral example I can give you was like 6 years ago. I was leading a transition project from an incumbent supplier to a new supplier for a customer service center for a government organization.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was lots of technology involved, and we were moving from a battered old system to AWS cloud stuff. And I went into this meeting room. It was my meeting. 20 middle-aged white blokes in a room. Who were the architects and the techies.
Mm.
Somebody starts talking, and I was actually asked if I was taking the minutes because they didn't know me. They were new organisations that I was working with, which was really painful. Mm. And I never let that man live it down. I get on with him now. I'll take the piss out of him regularly, and we have the chat. Yeah.
Did he
assumed I was the junior in the room that was just supporting the meeting.
Once you'd raised it though, what was his reaction?
I think he kind of laughed it off. I hope he felt embarrassed.
Yeah.
The age thing, another role years ago, I applied for a lead project, a senior project manager. I won't mention the organisation.
Yeah, please don't.
And turned up to the evaluation, assuming it was a 1 hour interview, rocked up, and they said, actually, you're here for 2 days and it's a big assessment centre. And I was probably the youngest person in the room. Went to these assessment centres, actually really enjoyed it. I felt like I did all right. I felt quite comfortable, quite confident with my my input. And they rang a couple of days later to say, we're really glad that we'd like to offer you the position, but we can't offer you the position you applied for. We don't think you've got the experience. We'll offer you a more junior position. Yeah. So we've created another more junior role.
That's good of them.
I was like, well, do you know what? I'll take a punt because I was ready to leave where I was. I liked this new organisation, what it was about. So I joined. The two other people they recruited were much more experienced than I was. But within about 6 weeks... they actually came to me and said, we completely underestimated you. I think we made the wrong decision out of interview, and we just want to give you the position that you applied for originally.
Mm.
So they bumped me up. But I think the only thing that changed that decision was my age. You know, I was maybe 20 years younger than the other candidates they took on at that level.
Yeah. Have things improved since then, do you think?
Yes. I think Opencast was described this week by a client as a Gen Z digital agency, and it's made us all laugh. We all think it's really funny. But actually, I think that perception of what a Gen Z digital people are has helped to support maybe a stereotype or an archetypal person be considered better than what they were in the past.
Yeah. That's interesting. I don't even know what that means in terms of like, I do understand the nuance of different generations. But sometimes I think, your grandparents back in my day, well, I'm sure their grandparents said the same thing.
Yeah.
Every generation is a bit different, but we're all fundamentally flawed.
Yeah.
And we all think we know better.
Definitely.
At times, which is interesting.
I'm just really grateful that what we think now is that tattoos and dress sense doesn't impact our ability to do a good job.
Yeah, you're right. I think it still creeps in sometimes.
So much less though, right?
Yeah. You see the odd thing on, the online world is a bit different. You see the odd person on LinkedIn commenting on about, we should wear a suit and tie to work. And if you want to, if that's part of your sort of, gives you confidence, then fill your boots. But at the same time, like you just said, it doesn't really mean you can do a better job. For some people, they might think it does because it's like a suit of armor, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's the same as my makeup, I always think if I'm going for an interview, I'll get ready like I'm going for a night out, right? I'll have my fake tan, I'll have my hair done, and that's how you feel best. We didn't care. I didn't put my face on. I probably wouldn't do as good a job, but about how I feel inside, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Is there anything you've changed your mind about recently that you never thought you would? You said you'd... it came across as if you sort of may have broadened your opinions on certain things. Is there anything that...
When you sent this question over, I went technical, thinking about work. Because I think wagile, I've probably changed my mind on, right?
Go on, what do you mean by that?
So I said earlier about this mix between building requirements, chucking over the fence, and then a digital team trying to redefine what it is and build it. I think wagile, waterfall, and agile could and perhaps should exist together if we find that blend better of how far up the value stream do we bring the agility. And whereas I used to slag off these organisations going, they talk agile and they reckon they're doing agile because they do a stand-up and they work in 2 week increments, whatever. I think there is a place for it. It just needs redefining.
How?
I want to know the answer. Trial and error. Keep trying things.
In terms of bring the people who are building it in earlier.
Yeah.
Or leave them, but still recognise that there is, use the government, there is still regulation and stuff like that.
Allow user to influence policy and legislation.
I mean, that's meta, isn't it? That's like pure politics.
Yeah.
That's like revolution.
It is. But surely it's what we need, right? Why do we still have a school system? Getting on my high horse now. Mm. We still have a school system, which this is one thing that I've picked up from sociology, like how bad the education system is in the UK compared to other countries. In the UK, we send kids to school 9 till 3, we exam them. Like in other countries, they don't have exam boards that are like drilling kids to pass an exam. We need to know what the kids need to know and teach them the right things in the right way and enable the world to exist around it better. I'm not explaining that very well, I don't think. Education should be reformed based on what we need today, not what was built. How long ago do you think it was decided that we went to school 9 till 3 and got exams? It was probably like 100 years ago. We probably need a bit of a revolution to match the world today, not the world back then when it was decided.
Yeah, I agree. I just feel sorry for the teachers who get it in the neck sometimes because they can only follow through with what they're told. And when I think teachers sometimes, by the way, I'm not saying you're saying this.
Yeah, I'm not having a dig at teachers at all. I think they're awesome.
I think in general, they get, they're an easy target, aren't they?
Yeah.
But because they're just following through with what they're told to do, like we all have to do at times. So yeah, I agree. Things need to change. I just think teachers sometimes are an easy target.
Yeah.
Because they put so many hours in. And that old argument of, oh, they have all the holidays off, not a lot of people realise. They only get paid for a certain number of hours, which doesn't include the holidays.
Yeah.
So there's not as if they, you know, get an extra pay for the holidays or anything like that.
But even if you think about the health system instead of education, like the world's moved on so much, technology's moved on so much, yet we're so risk averse. And rightly so, we're not going to risk someone's life by putting them in front of a bit of technology instead of a doctor. But there are things that we could do with technology that doesn't need a doctor that we've got today that we didn't have 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Let's totally move with the times, yeah?
So we're a hypothetical example of someone who's going through some sort of diagnosis and they've got to go through, you know, they've got to go to a hospital elsewhere, say it's in Manchester, to go and see a specialist. Just do it on Zoom, mate.
Yeah.
why are we doing this 3-hour round trip?
Yeah, for literally a 2-minute chat, probably.
Did it in COVID. The amount of stress that's going to put on the individual who's suffering, for them to get potentially an answer that they don't want, would they be more comfortable with having that answer at home and not having that hour and a half sort of lonely car journey back?
Yeah.
Like just the simple things like that from a user point of view could go a long way. Now, you're always going to get the people who want the face-to-face, just like you're always going to get the people who want to go in the branch for it to bank.
Yeah.
But those majorities are going to shift.
Yeah, and the user-centered principle is you then scale that need. So, you know, interview 10 people, 2 of them want to go into branch. Well, then just build 20% of the service that enables that branch interaction and build the 80% of the service that's all virtual.
Yeah, or have a building. A shared working space where these bank, we do open banking.
Yeah.
So have a
counter for them and a counter. It is big stuff. It is big revolutions, but it's simple. It's based on what we need and what's available.
Yeah. What else is on your mind? Is there anything else?
Oh, I love your question that you said. What was your, if you had a fiver, I'm probably stealing your script.
No, go for it. But yeah, if I gave you a fiver to spend in Poundland, what are you getting?
I love this question because I bloody love Poundland as
question,
well.
That. So I don't always go for it, but go on.
So really sadly, like my go-to is the stationery aisle.
Yeah.
I love a pen. I love paper. So. Yeah. Or jellies.
What, sweets?
Yeah, sweets. I've got a sweet tooth. Yeah, but I'd be dead happy just going and getting a new pad and a bit of paper. No, a new pad and a bit of pen.
And then £3 on sweets.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to bring to the table? Anything else you want to talk about? What else is going on in that brain?
I think maybe there's something that's in my mind about, like, I don't claim to be the best agilist or I don't think I'm technically good or specialist at any of this stuff. I found it a little bit nerve-wracking at first, thinking, oh, shit, I've got to go and talk like I sound like I know what I'm on about in terms of agile.
Yeah.
And I don't think we necessarily always need to know all of the things. We just need to know how to work with the people, have good interaction, have a good conversation to get the best out of someone else that can bring that to the table.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't know if everybody feels that or if everybody feels a sense of pressure that, like I might do sometimes, to be a better agilist or a really technical specialist in a particular area.
So you mentioned before about pressure coming from yourself.
Yeah.
But do you feel the pressure? Where does the agile pressure come from?
I do, because imposter syndrome, right? Okay. I lead 35 consultants all the way from a consultant level to a lead consultant level who come with like bags and bags of talent. Loads of them could walk me under the table, but in theory I'm leading them. So that imposter syndrome, I think, drives that thought process for me to be a better technical specialist.
How'd you handle that?
Bag it. Fake it till you make it.
You can't be faking it until you make it, because you wouldn't be in the position you are if you had.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
So no, you don't do any mantras.
No.
Or manifestation.
I'd love someday to do some really big public speaking and, you know, really inspire people, but I don't think it's ever going to be anything niche specialist. It'll be quite a generic topic.
Agile Manchester next year.
Yeah. I did go this year. It's the first time I've been to Agile Manchester.
Did you, what day did you go on?
The Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
The Thursday and the Friday morning.
Did you see any particular marketing that was doing the rounds outside of the venue?
Not outside the venue, no.
No billboards with...
I'm going to let you down here. Was it Everyday Agile outside?
Yeah, we did a marketing campaign outside of there.
Sorry.
That's all right. It's good data, right? But yeah, there were some sandwich boards with certain individuals on them.
Right.
About trying to make them agile.
Right, okay.
I won't be doing that again because some of the pictures were a bit controversial. Right. The council removed them, to be honest.
So
that's probably why I didn't see them. Anything else on your mind? Anything else you'd like to get across to people? Any messages?
No, don't
think
so.
Anything from an agile point of view that is on your mind?
Don't think so, no.
All right. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this month's episode. If you enjoyed the conversation, please let us know in the comments. And also, tell your mates, like and subscribe. And I'll see you next time.